This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Coming up next Saturday, October 11th at the Duke Energy Convention Center, it's Books by the Banks, the Cincinnati USA Book Festival featuring over 100 authors in attendance, some great panels, a kids' corner, and so much more that's going on. And among the special author guests will be Hampton Sides, whose book, In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Voyage of the USS Jeannette, is now in bookstores. Hampton Sides is an award-winning editor from Outside Magazine, has contributed to National Geographic, and is also the author of the best-selling histories Hellbound on His Trail, Blood and Thunder, and Ghost Soldiers. Hampton Sides, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Good to be with you guys.
I wanted to begin by asking about how you came across the USS Jeannette, because I saw at the end in your acknowledgments where you say, thanks to National Geographic for sending me to Norway so I could learn about the USS Jeannette. But I guess you went to Norway for a different reason, but discovered the story?
Yeah, I was writing about a Norwegian explorer named Fridtjof Nansen who had tried to duplicate the voyage of the Jeannette in a different kind of vessel about 20 years later. This would have been the 1890s. And at his museum in Oslo, there are all these references to the Jeannette voyage, to the commander, George Washington DeLong, talking endlessly about this American voyage that I, as an American, had never even remotely heard of. So I just kind of filed that away and came home from Oslo and began to dig around and realized that this was a huge story in its day. Everybody in the world, certainly everyone in the United States, knew about the Jeannette and what they were trying to do. But for some combination of reasons, it had fallen between the cracks of history, and it's completely obscure today. So I thought that was a good starting point for writing a book.
When you did some research into George Washington DeLong and that 1879 expedition to the North Pole, I imagine the story was an eye-opener.
It was a complete eye-opener to me. It was not only was it had completely, you know, been forgotten by history, but, you know, it had all the attributes that you want in a great, you know, historical narrative. Great characters, amazing primary documents, interesting settings, and a story that really kind of uncorked the times. In this case, the Gilded Age. This was a time when the United States was, you know, having emerged from the devastation of the Civil War, was beginning to kind of flex its muscles on the world stage. We were accumulating power and wealth, and we were trying to compete with the British and the other European powers in this great puzzle, which was, what is at the top of the world? It's almost impossible for us to understand now just how sort of nagging and gnawing this obsession was. People had to know what was up there, but they couldn't reach it. They couldn't get through the ice. So there were a lot of theories swirling around about how to do it, and this was an expedition that was designed to test a concept that was known as the open polar sea. There was this idea that if you could just get through the ice in one of these gateways, you could reach this warm, or at least ice-free, ocean at the top of the world, an idea that this goes back to the Greeks and the Vikings, and it was obviously wrong, very wrong,
yes.
We know now, but it was one of the leading scientific theories of its day. So that's the environment that produced the Jeannette voyage.
And it talked about that girdle of ice, and there were many, many theories related, including one with an Ohio tie, John Cleves Sims. The hollow earth theory, thought that there was a big crater at the North Pole.
Well, he believed there was these giant holes at both the north and south that led down into the earth and where people lived and perhaps exotic species that had never been seen before. He was a bit of a crank, but extremely popular and sold out auditoriums all over the country with his holes at the poles theory. What's interesting to me is when you Google this now, you find that there's still this subculture of people out there who believe this. This idea seems to persist. They think that it's the explanation for, you know, for UFOs and all sorts of strange atmospheric phenomena, airplanes that go missing. And the Obama administration is doing everything it can to prevent us from knowing about it. It's one of these great kind of wacky conspiracy theories. So the idea persists, and it seems to speak to this rather deeply embedded notion that there's something big up there that, you know, that we're being prevented from knowing exactly what it is. Magnify that times, you know, 1,000, and you might get some sense of what the culture was like in the 1870s as the Jeannette Voyage was preparing to launch.
Speaking with Hampton Sides, the author of In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Voyage of the USS Jeannette. He will be at Books by the Banks next weekend at the Duke Energy Convention Center, discussing his book and signing copies. And I wanted to introduce folks to, you already mentioned George Washington DeLong. He was the captain of this expedition, but really it was the financial backing of James Gordon Bennett Jr. that helped this expedition of the Jeannette happen. Introduce us to James Gordon Bennett.
Well, yeah, the Jeannette Voyage was a unique kind of hybrid expedition. It was a U.S. naval expedition officered by naval officers and flying under naval rules. It was a national endeavor, but it was paid for entirely by a private citizen. This was James Gordon Bennett Jr., the publisher of the New York Herald, which was then the largest newspaper in the world. He was one of the richest men in Manhattan, had inherited this newspaper from his father, and was a great believer in spectacle and sports and adventure and exploration. He had sent Stanley to Africa to find Livingston, although Livingston wasn't exactly lost, but it was a great series of dispatches that Stanley sent back to the paper, and it was an enormous hit. And Bennett was really kind of looking for an encore to Stanley Livingston when he decided to bankroll an expedition to the North Pole to test these various theories of an open polar sea. So you kind of have this unusual arrangement, we would think very unorthodox today, of the Navy joining forces with a private individual. It'd sort of be like Ted Turner collaborating with NASA to launch a mission to Mars or something. unusual today, but then those kinds of arrangements were necessary because the Navy was so poor, so anemic. It had the will, but it didn't have the largesse to bring off an expedition this ambitious.
And George Washington DeLong, the captain of the USS Jeannette, was an American naval officer, and you just spoke a little bit about the Navy at the time not being all the Navy is today, really being not very useful at all, and with a lot of young men like George Washington DeLong looking for new adventures, and that's part of what prompted him to want to take this expedition to the North Pole.
Yeah, he had just missed the Civil War by a matter of months when he graduated from the Naval Academy, and I think that was true of many men of his generation who had just missed this great conflict on whichever side, and there was a little bit of chip on his shoulder to do something equally momentous, equally heroic. And if he wasn't going to win glory on fields of battle, then perhaps he would, he thought, win glory on fields of ice. And he had been to Greenland on an earlier expedition, had fallen in love with the Arctic and with the atmospheric phenomena, with the plays of light up there, the strange way that sound travels. There's something about the Arctic that it seems to either grab people or completely turn them away. And he was one of the ones who just fell in absolute love with it. And he decided that he had to devote himself the rest of his life to solving this enormous planetary riddle of what was at the top of the world. So he planned this expedition for about 5 years, and met Bennett and got his ship, the Jeannette, and sailed it around the Horn to San Francisco, where it was massively reinforced for the ice. And it was stuffed with all the latest American inventions, including Edison's newly designed lights and telephones from Alexander Graham Bell, and an organ, lots of musical instruments, a state-of-the-art library, and many, many cases of Budweiser beer, and enough food to last for 3 years. So they were very well provisioned and very well prepared as they left San Francisco in the summer of 1879, bound for the Bering Strait.
We're talking about the grand and terrible voyage of the USS Jeannette from the book In the Kingdom of Ice by Hampton Sides. Hampton Sides on the phone with us here on Cincinnati Edition. And despite the fact that he had all this latest technology, had talked to quote-unquote experts, since no one had been there, you know, everyone had a theory, but some of the leading experts of the time and whalers, other ship captains to learn what to expect, and thought that going up the Bering Strait was going to be the way to go because there was this polar current that would carry him across the top of the pole and then down past Greenland, right?
Yeah, well, the theory was that very much like the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic Ocean, we were learning about this other current, this other powerful current in the Pacific called the Kuroshiwo, which sweeps up from Japan and heads in the general direction of the Bering Strait. It hadn't been studied very well about precisely where it went, but the idea was it goes through the Bering Strait and tunnels under and through the ice and converges at the North Pole with the Gulf Stream. Kind of a grandiose, perhaps overly tidy idea
yes.
that a German scientist had come up with. And it was obviously wrong. There was some truth to it. It does go in the general direction of the north, but it kind of peters out and frays into multiple smaller currents. But anyway, they went north through the Bering Strait also because people were deeply curious about what lay north of our new territory up there. We had fairly recently purchased Alaska from the Russians, and no one had been north of the Bering Strait except for some Arctic whaling vessels. And there are some islands and other land masses up there that were at least believed to be up there that was a secondary goal of this expedition to try to land on and claim them for the United States. So, you know, as soon as they passed north of the Bering Strait, they very quickly got into uncharted waters unfortunately, did not find this current that we were talking about. They got locked in the ice, and they drifted haplessly, hopelessly, for 2 years until finally the enormous pressure of the ice pack crushed the hull of the ship, and the Jeannette sank to the bottom of the Arctic Ocean.
But I found it in the book. You know, I was pulling for him and not knowing how the story ended. Was thrilled when the Jeannette finally began to break free from being frozen in the ice, but it wasn't but a day or so after she finally was floating again that she was crushed and sank. And
right.
And
yeah,
I could just imagine from their perspective, that had to just take the wind out of your sails, if you may.
Yeah, I mean, there was this momentary reprieve where everything seemed to be fine. But then the ice closed back up with even greater pressure and promptly sank. Luckily, DeLong had a very thorough and very well-planned evacuation scheme. He knew which belongings he wanted to get out on the ice and was able to get most of his plan into effect. The three open boats, the 40 dogs, some food, and some other essentials were brought out on the ice just in time. The ship sinks, and these men are forced to think about retreating over the ice to the nearest landmass, which is the central Siberian coast along the Arctic Ocean. And it's about 1,000 miles away. And they don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, to begin this march. They've got essentially to do it during the summertime because winter's going to come on quickly in September. So it's this enormous, really, survival story. It's just this enormous endeavor. These 33 men are all in harness, dragging their belongings, dragging their small boats over the ice, across these pressure ridges and falling into the water constantly, constantly wet, constantly freezing, working their way south toward open water.
Amazing story of the survivors of the USS Jeannette, and it goes on. I don't want to give away the end because it's such a fascinating account. But they do eventually make it to the coast of Siberia and then on from there. But I noticed as I was reading in the acknowledgments again at the end of the book that you actually visited a lot of these places that the crew of the USS Jeannette had been. And that must have been quite a trip for you.
Yeah, well, you know, when I do these narrative histories, I really try as hard as I can to physically, you know, travel to the places that I'm writing about. And in this case, it seems especially important because very few people, from at least from the United States, have been to that part of Russia. And during the Cold War, it was virtually impossible. And also because of the ice, it was very difficult to get to some of these places. But the combination of the breakup of the Cold War and the receding of the ice made it possible to go to this place, Wrangel Island, and some of the other islands off the coast of Siberia that figure into the story, and also the Lena Delta of Siberia, which it plays a major role in the last 100 pages of the book. An amazing, now very restricted, Russian nature preserve where the men made landfall. So I wanted to go there, pay my respects, try to understand, you know, what happened to the men, those who lived, those who died, and kind of unravel the story a little bit. It's such an amazing landscape, and it's so alien to anything that I'd ever experienced before. The Lena Delta is like this enormous labyrinth of islands, three times larger than the Everglades, except it's a frozen Everglades. And this is where DeLong and his men landed, and I wanted to go back and just kind of retrace their footsteps.
And it seems that you had quite a treasure trove to pull from for your narrative, because you found a descendant of George DeLong.
You know, I've been doing these histories for a while now, and I've never had this almost cliche experience that that historians dream about, which is you call a little old lady and who's a distant relative, and she says, you know, I have this trunk in my attic full of old letters. You know, you want to come look at them? And, of course, I flew immediately to her. She lived in Connecticut, and it turned out to be the personal papers of the wife of the commander, Emma DeLong. She had lived a long life and had saved everything, and it was fairly well organized. These beautiful letters that she had written to her husband and letters he had written to her during their courtship days, and, you know, photographs and manuscripts and all kinds of stuff. But the best part of this collection for me were these letters to nowhere, as she called them, these letters that she wrote him in the summer of 1881 and sent north by way of Arctic whaling vessels in the hope that somehow, some way, they would reach him. And as they are, of course, slogging over the ice and suffering mightily and trying to make their way to Siberia, she's writing these letters, and they're just beautiful, they're elegant, they're eloquent, and heart-aching to read as the story goes from bad to worse.
An incredible story, and fascinating to get this glimpse into the Gilded Age. Thank you for sharing, and look forward to seeing you at Books by the Banks.
I'm really looking forward to it as well, and nice to be with you.
Hampton Sides. He's the author of In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Voyage of the USS Jeanette. It's available where books are sold. You can find a link to it and learn more about Hampton and his work at our website, wvxu.org. You'll also find out more information about Books by the Banks. It's at the Duke Energy Convention Center next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Details about the Books by the Banks Cincinnati USA Book Festival on our website, wvxu.org, as well. This is Cincinnati Edition.